Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. Yes, you, fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet at this table for an hour to experience, educate, encourage, and empower one another through our joys and our lessons learned. We share topics that tradition tells us there's some things we just do not talk about. But here we live beyond both the judgment and the wreckage. We share aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for too long. Every week we start right where we are. Although many of your voices will speak light into darkness, there is no insignificant person around this table. However, you must come dressed in your inner awesome, believing that impossible is merely a word. You're listening to Radio Fairfax in Fairfax, Virginia, cablecast on Cox and Verizon Fios Channel 37 and Comcast Channel 27 in Reston, and webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Should you miss us, no worry. You can catch our archive, Frankly Speaking, Tyra G podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And if you feel like connecting with me offline, it's easy. Email me at tyra@tyragarlington.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song, and for naming it, I'm Listening. Globally, our world has been challenged in a way that it hasn't been for over 100 years. An invisible enemy has invaded our privacy, our routines, our expectations, and our hopes. Here in the United States, we began to see evidence of unparalleled challenges to our healthcare systems, our economy, and to wonder if our democracy would be strong enough to withstand the attacks on our Constitution. Perhaps some of you, like me, have often felt mental and emotional uncertainty and rest. It seems that everything that could be shaken is now shaking, where noise, angry noise, seems to be drowning out laughter and love. And yet, a look behind this external, emotionally challenging landscape, perhaps peeking through the changing of seasons, lives for some an internal, emotional, steady effort to maintain and sustain their lives with a part of them missing, a child. The courageous conversation we're sharing today demands that you listen with your heart and with your spirit. It's not designed to entertain, but it will hopefully educate, empower, and encourage you to know that your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. To create a common thought space this week, consider the following, and I quote, "He called me on Sunday night. Normally, I would call him. So if he called me, it was because he needed a ride or some kind of help. But not this time. We talked about his health. We talked about his need to get a referral to a gastroenterologist to deal with nausea and abdominal pain. We talked about his desire to go with us the next time we visit his brother in Los Angeles. We made plans to meet for lunch on Wednesday. We often end a call with, 'I love you, bye.' This call seemed different, more significant and weighty somehow. When it was time to say goodbye, I said with real feeling, 'I love you, son.' He answered, 'I love you, dad.' And those were the last words either of us spoke to the other. A few hours later, he was gone. How do I feel? As sad as I've ever been. I have ended a few emails saying, I've got to go drink some water now so that I can make some more tears. In fact, I think I need a glass of water now. If I had known 33 years ago that I would be saying goodbye to that 8-pound, 3-ounce bundle of new life so soon, would I do it again? In a heartbeat. His life had and has great meaning. A friend shared a great Winnie the Pooh quote and his viewing, saying, "How lucky I am to have something that makes me saying goodbye so hard." Headlines from the Boston Globe and the Washington Post have shared the following perspectives on the subject of the loss of a child from different parents, and I quote, "It literally feels like I have a hole in my heart." I quote again, "It gets harder and harder." Again, "A natural doesn't even begin to cover it." Again, "You can find your way back. You have to learn to live with it." Joining me at the Frankly Speaking table this week to have a courageous conversation is a family who is also living a headline. They are generous and authentic and vulnerable and loving. The David Owens family. David, Missy, his wife, and Tim, his son, are here from Chatham, Massachusetts, and they have said yes to me, to you, and to sharing. When thinking of tonight, a Helen Reddy's song popped into my mind. A friend sent it to me at the death of my mother, and it's called "You and Me Against the World." The lyrics I altered a bit to fit the Owens family. It says, "And when one of us is gone, and some of us are left to carry on, then remembering will have to do. Your memories alone will see us through." Welcome, David, Missy, and Tim, to Frankly Speaking this week. Thank you so much. Please know, there are no expectations here except for you to be you. This is not a show. This is a conversation. There is no judgment, only gratitude for your presence. To my listening office and audience tonight, I've asked the family to introduce each other rather than themselves, and to add a new chapter to our human library of stories. So, Missy, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Tyra. I would like to introduce David, my husband. David and I have been married for 40 years this December. He is a hardworking, strong, dedicated provider for his family. He is a private person, but always is generous in helping his community and willing to listen to the needs of others. David loved to watch his daughter and sons play their school sports, and he now enjoys watching his grandchildren in their activities. David has a good sense of humor, enjoys talking to people, and is a treasure hunter at heart. He is always doing house cleanouts and enjoys some of the very interesting items he seems to find and collect. David is a great person.
Thank you, Missy, very much. And I will introduce my son, Tim. And first, I'd just like to say that our daughter, Adrian, was unable to attend with us tonight, but she will be listening at a later date. My son, Tim, is our youngest child. And I was always interested in me how different my three children are. And Tim is a very hard worker. He's a very strong young man. He does a lot of physical work. I enjoyed having him follow me around when he was quite young. I want to do that. I want to play with the tools. I want to get climb up there. And he's very forthcoming with chipping in for a hand. And he's a very loving person. He has several stepchildren that he loves very much. He loves his nieces, his niece and his two nephews. And I'm just grateful that he's around and part of the family to help us all through this.
Thank you, Dad. I am going to introduce Mom, Missy, the oldest one in the bunch. Coming from the youngest one in the bunch. Mom has always been there for us kids through school, learning, and would always help us with anything we needed, whether it's school, sports, homework, or, hey, can we not tell Dad? She's always willing to give a hand and teach us kids and anyone else who we invite over. The three of us kids would always, hey, can our friends stay over for the whole summer? And she always would welcome everybody in with open arms, and a big, big part of our family and keeping all of us in line to the best of her ability. And we appreciate her very much and all she is doing and has done for this family.
You know, I have to put a disclaimer in right now. I met Mr. David Owens first. I had a working vacation, actually several of them, on the Cape. And he was there to help me and my friends through a difficult time. And we were taking care of my friend's mother's estate, who was deceased. And pretty soon, David showed up. There was nothing to do. He just came and sat down and talked to us. And we began, through David, to understand what Chatham, Mass. Was like. It's a very warm and loving community. But one by one, Missy was at the table. Then Tim was at the table. And I said to them, like you heard, I hope, the key word in the introductions was love and loving. And they truly, they care for one another. And they care for people that come into their presence. And Missy, I think, was at our table for maybe an hour one time. And her parting remarks was, hey, it feels like family. And that meant the world to me. And there is someone, a son, who is not at the table in person, but is at the table in spirit. And I wonder if any or all of you want to talk about that person and introduce him to our listening audience.
Sure. We're all looking at each other. Our son, Ken, had a pretty good short life, and he was killed in an accident in Hawaii while serving as a Navy diver on SEAL Team 1. And on October 12th, 2009, he was just a wonderful person. Things that we've said about each other in our introduction would also apply to him. He was an adventure seeker. He did a lot of exciting things, and he also took time out for his family and friends whenever they needed him or the time allowed. It was a very devastating experience for us as a family and as individuals. I happened to be home by myself when I got the call on the Columbus Day weekend, and the rest of my family was actually in Maine, coming back from a four-wheeling vacation trip. And I was so worried because of the communication abilities that we have in this day and age that someone would call them after they heard the news on the internet, so on and so forth. But luckily, they all arrived back home, and I was able to bear the bad news to them before the world knew it. And we went on very slowly from there.
David, you are the only person that can answer this question. Okay, let's go back. It's 2009. The phone rings. You get the news. What happened to you at that point and the time between that point and you're telling the family? Emotionally, mentally, what were you going through? Can you share that? Can you get back to that point without too much pain?
Yes. There was it was like somebody pulled a rug of life out from under you.
Mm-hmm.
It was, which a friend of mine talked to me about at a later time. It was like somebody reached in and grabbed my heart and ripped it out. And it was, I was torn between trying to get the information to my family first and being so far away from my son when he was had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to deal with that, and it was through reaching out to other people and people reaching out to us, and it's taken a long time to get to where we are, and we still have a long time to go, but it was a very, very devastating experience. And I could say that pretty much everything went dark for a while, and some of his life and my life with him went before my eyes, just like you hear on TV. And it's, I prayed an awful lot and tried to ask for help to get through this. I had did not know what to do. And while I waited for the family to return, some things that went through my mind were, when I was a young man, my younger brother passed. And a few years before Ken passed, that my son Tim had his daughter was stillborn. And when I tried to think, what did we do? How did we feel? How did we get through it? Just walking on eggshells, trying to get some answers and waiting for some help. And it was a really tough road for a long time.
As to be expected, it is a process. Missy, can you get to that moment you heard the news as the mother can?
Yes. We did drive home, and David was in the driveway at my daughter's house, and he came out and he told us that Ken had passed. Through a parachute accident. And I don't think I stopped crying for a few days.
Okay, it's all right. Go with it. You don't have to stop crying now.
But I think I went on autopilot, and I told the family that we had to go out and get Ken in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And we got airplane tickets and flew out there. I think it was the best thing we could do, because we met Ken's Navy buddies and everybody at the station. What do you call it? The dive command.
Uh-huh.
And we felt like we got a little more of Ken, because they would tell us stories of how funny he is, how smart he wanted to. He did finances in college, a degree in economics and business, and he would go up to people and tell them how to save their money and what to do with it, and stories of how funny he was and how far he swam, and he was always the first at something, and we just kind of, you know, held on to all the stories from his men there. So it made us, you know, have Ken back for moments, and then we came home and had a service here for him. But it has been a long, long, hard road. I think we took about 2 or 3 years before we went to a group called the Compassionate Friends. Mm-hmm. It's international. And we were there for a couple of years. And we're just building back strength and learning how to get together as a family with Ken missing. And I think that's, like you said, where everybody comes with a loss to the table differently at different times. Mm-hmm. With different feelings, sadness or happiness. And so it's been a while, and I think we hung in there, and I think we're getting there, and we miss him every day, but we know that he's okay, and he's with God, and we're all, you know, knowing that that's the way it is, you know, so we move forward.
I hear you. I hear your bravery. Tim, do you have anything to add? Of course you do, because you are Tim and you are not Missy or David. What happened to you during that time?
So that was October 12th, and we're on our way back from our four-wheeler trip, and Dad, per usual, wanted to get some work done, and hey, you guys go have fun and enjoy yourselves, and I'll be here when you get home. And October 12th, day before my birthday.
Mm.
And ever since he would go away to college, when he first joined boot camp and then went out to Hawaii, no matter where he was, if he wasn't going to be around the day before or a couple of days before, whenever he was supposed to go out and do something, he'd always give me a phone call. And I remember sitting in the car, 5.5 hour drive till we get home, trying to remember the time change.
Mm.
Well, getting a little late. Okay, well, maybe I'll get that phone call tomorrow morning. And like clockwork, no matter what, even if I was the last person or first person he'd call, I would get one of those. And we get closer to home. We pull into the driveway, and Dad's standing outside. Oh, well, maybe he got us some food and knew we had a long ride and wanted to see how everything was, and it was the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Dad loves to pull our legs when we were little kids, joke with us, tease with us, have fun and smile. And I can remember him telling us he had an accident. I can remember Mom screaming at him, "You're joking, right? You're joking, right?"
Mm.
And the look on both their faces, and my sister and myself, and it hit, and we all basically huddled, got down, tried to comfort each other the best way we could. And it it hit hard, and it I knew it. I've dealt with loss of a stillborn in the prior year. I've had a lot of classmates and everything just hit. And I remember breaking down and just speechless. I don't think I can remember talking or saying anything for a while. And, you know, I still think of that day throughout the year and months, and looking back and the second hardest thing from that night, and I still think about a lot, is the pain my dad went through holding that in.
Yes, that, yes.
That home, without being able to call or tell anybody. That hit me just as hard, because it's family and we're a year apart, and it's just everything was standing still, and I had no words.
I appreciate, first of all of you reaching back, but I know in my heart you're not reaching back. I know what you're feeling is what you feel. And I want to gravitate to Ken. You mentioned, Missy, some of the stories that they told you when you were in Hawaii. And I want us to focus on some of the other stories. And Ken left a legacy, didn't he? Didn't he have a son?
Yes. I'll butt in.
You're not butting in. This is family. We're talking.
We had been invited to go to a service that the dive command put on at Navy Station Pearl Harbor.
Oh, okay.
Because we were so far away, we had to go. We had to see Ken. We couldn't wait for them to bring him home. So our immediate family went out to Hawaii for the service. And after the fact, we understood that not many families travel that far. They just wait for the
child to help.
The people to be sent home. Anyway, we got out there, and they had a beautiful service. There was a lot of his Navy brothers participating. And as Missy said, had we not gone out there for that, after Ken came home and we had the service here, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we would have gone out there, and it would have been not only a disservice to us, but a disservice to all of Ken's Navy brothers and sisters we met. And as Missy said, we saw that part of his world, and we've met some wonderful people, made some wonderful friendships. And one quick story that one of his Navy brothers, and they all call each other nicknames, so this is his friend Jersey.
Okay.
And so every morning, being in the special ops, they got up at dark 30, went over to the base, swam across the harbor, ran around the harbor, went back to the weight tent, worked out, went and took a shower, and then started their day of activities and training.
Mm-hmm.
So Jersey's telling me that, you know, we went out partying one night. I don't know about your son, Mr. Owens, but he was in pretty rough shape when we got back. Up in the morning, where'd he go? So they all crawled down to the base, swam across the harbor, ran around the harbor, worked out in the tent, went to go take a shower, and Ken's sitting in there reading a magazine saying, where have you guys been? So it was stuff like that. We did hear a lot of stories, and We have reached out from time to time to try to get more, and they're slow coming, but
what's the name of the website? Doesn't the name of the website have something to do with Ken?
Yes. We have a website that we started because we do a memorial soccer tournament every August, and we give out scholarships in his name to athletes and people that have similar direction as Ken had. So we're sitting around here with some high school friends of his trying to decide what to put on his headstone.
Okay.
And so everybody said, well, I don't know. What do we get? Well, from kindergarten through college, every sport that he played, his number was 14. So close friend of his, Brett, who played sports with him all through high school, said, how about we put on the bottom of the stone, 14, set the bar, because he certainly set the bar for all his friends in sports and school activities and in the service. So that's what we have on the bottom of his headstone. And we started a website, which is 14, the number 14, setthebar.org. And we've had some stories that people send in there. We have some video and photos of some of the past soccer tournaments. We had just got together with someone this summer who's helping us rebuild it because we have so many videos and photos and information and stuff. But we had started taking making notes, writing stories ourselves as a family, mainly to keep a diary and things that we could talk to his son about when his son got older. And then somewhere along the line, some people said, well, why don't you get all this together and maybe we'll write a book about this. So I think eventually that's the direction we're going, but we have written a lot of stories and things like that. So we're trying to make that effort, but we try to put information on the website of how we're doing and how the soccer tournament's going. And we have a lot of work to do on it, but we're moving slowly but surely towards that.
You know, one of the more important things you said, and I think all of you said it, we're moving. We are moving forward. I know you put adjectives, moving slowly, et cetera, but you are moving, and you have to remember that because you are living, you are breathing, you are moving. I want to, Missy, you talked about, or maybe it was David, I don't know, compassionate friends?
Yes.
Talk about that. You know, what's the origin and what's the power of it? What did it give to you? You said you were there for 2 years, so it must have been doing something positive. What was that like, Missy?
It was, I think, about 2 years after Ken's passing. We didn't do it right away, but I had found an ad in the paper or something in the paper of the Compassionate Friends. It's an international organization of parents who have, lost their child, who has, they had passed away in any kind of form. And so we went, and it was just that you had people there that knew and felt the heartache. We were there to support each other, to listen to stories. You have to kind of let it out. You had to find an avenue to let some of that heartache out, and people there willing to support you in that.
Yes.
They were a very fine group, and we moved on after, I think it was 2 or 3 years. Just kind of felt more comfortable. We had gotten, progressed to move forward. I guess maybe we were still searching for some answers. mm-hmm. but very, very warm, compassionate group that knew how you felt and were there for you. You could call them anytime. They do have a newsletter, and I think one of the big parts of that years that I had attended was a news piece that said about children.
Uh-huh.
And I did try to get Adrian and Tim to go and just sit and listen, and yet it wasn't their time. But it did say that children do it at their own time.
In their own way, yes, yes.
Because they are looking to see how the family is now put together with a lost wheel, a spoke, you know.
Yes.
Is this, going to turn? It's kind of a little lumpy on parts, missing that one spoke. So we all had to build back together in the relationship. So we enjoyed it. We enjoyed the people we met.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we see many of them had come to the Kenny Cup and supported that. The scholarship fund there, and every once in a while we see other people in the supermarket and stuff. So it was well worth our experiencing that.
I'm sorry, I interrupted somebody. Go ahead.
I was going to do a little spinoff on that.
Sure.
But something came to mind. Although I do want to start with one story and one other thing before I do the spinoff on moms.
Okay.
So I was fortunate enough to go out and visit him a couple months before the accident.
Uh-huh.
And we surprised him. And of course, he was surprised. I would say not even 10 minutes after being there, and I met my nephew. My brother says, "Come into the kitchen." Uh-oh, this doesn't sound good.
Mm-hmm.
He gives me a cordless screw gun and a bag full of these little plastic things and screws and goes, "I've been trying for 5 days. How the, hell do you put them on?" He passed the test without opening a book. You give him the quote-unquote street smarts, common sense stuff.
Uh-huh.
He's got no clue. For me, that all comes natural. Mm-hmm. The book stuff, for me, is him trying to put those brackets on the door so his son won't get into any cabinets.
I now figure out what you mean. Okay, the safety. Yeah, okay. All right. But he couldn't do that.
Yeah, he couldn't. So that was pretty much within 10 minutes of being there. That's the first thing I got to do while I was there. And I actually got to take part with him twice while I was out there. Skydive 2 different times while I was out there, so I got to enjoy what he had loved doing. Okay. And I did it again here in Chatham. I believe it was on his anniversary.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 years ago or
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm.
It's been about that. And I was all excited and told my friends, and they're like, "Really? You're going to go and do that?" And my response, without hesitation, "I will do that anytime that's in front of me." And people looked at me, you know, I've had, a lot of people have had friends in car accidents pass away. We still drive. You know, you can't let things hold you back if it brings joy, even if there is a bad memory or a bad experience that someone has gone through. He love to skydive, and I enjoy doing it, and I would go tomorrow. So I wanted to mention that for anyone who has a sibling or a family member that they're having a hard time with, and they enjoy doing an activity that has caused an accident with a loved one, and they're contemplating to do it. I myself, it might be different for somebody else, I will definitely go skydiving however many times it's put in front of me, because he enjoyed it. I got to share it with him. And it just something we had a good time with.
I think, Tim, the message there is you keep him alive that way in your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's right there with you. I feel that way mm-hmm. about some things I do, thinking I'm with Mother. Let me ask you this. Can each one of you come up with a most tender memory? I don't know, Tim, you may have just shared yours. Can you come up with the most tender memory of Ken?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Missy.
I have many, but the one I always like to repeat that I remember is Ken was in college, must have been the first year. So it was 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it was 2003. I'm sorry. And a knock on the door came, and I went down and answered it because I was upstairs cleaning. And there was a man handing me two tickets to the U.S. Open in Flushing Meadows from my son.
Oh, my.
And he wanted to thank me for being his mom. And he and I drove to the U.S. Open, because I remember it was 2003 now.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, Mom, I don't like to stand in line. He never liked to stand in line.
Mm-hmm.
But this is fun. And he stayed with me, and we watched the U.S. Open for, I think it was a Thursday or Friday.
Uh-huh.
And we had the best time. I was so thrilled that he thought that I love tennis, and he thought of me, and he knew I always wanted to go. So,
well, that's priceless. That is priceless. That's indelible. Anybody else have a tender memory you want to share?
Go ahead.
All right. Quick. Yeah. So I got one more that really sticks out.
Okay.
So it also had to do when I was out there visiting him.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the skeet shooting range multiple times while we were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a normal two barrel and one that you actually had to pump. And he goes, you take that one because it's your first time and da-da-da. So you get 25 clay pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And did 100 rounds each that night. And he always gloated, oh, I love doing this. I come out here every chance I get. I'm really good. I'm good. And da-da-da. Okay. Competitive beyond belief.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many Super Nintendo remotes he broke as we were kids. My second time shooting,
uh-huh.
I got 23 out of 25, and I don't even think he broke 20. So to be able to gloat about that to him, because he has that access all the time, was pretty good.
Brothers, what is it? Boys will be boys? Yeah, I love it. I love it. I can see it. I'm very visual. I can see the two of you. And you probably just looked over, and he looked at you. And I'm not going to figure out what you all said to one another. Let me ask you something. David, did you have something you want to share? Because I want each of you to get a chance to read your letters before we finish up.
I just always enjoyed all of my children, being able to watch them having a good time and interacting with others And I'm going to go back just real quick. In the beginning after this, it might have been a couple of years after Ken passed, that pretty much everything in my life, I can't speak for the family, but everything in my life, more often than not, went backwards at a high rate of speed. And it was very difficult hanging on to the present and trying to work towards the future. And I had three friends of mine. My friend Phyllis put her hand on my heart and one on my back and squeezed me tenderly and said, I know that your heart's broken. It will heal and it will keep you going. Just have faith in God. I had another friend, Barbara, who hugged me, who lost a son from a tragedy. And she whispered in my ear, it'll never go away, but as time goes by, you'll learn to tolerate it. And my other friends, Joe and Susan, who lost their son in an accident, told us as a family that none of us will be on the same page at the same time. But I think that's the way a lot of things in life are. But all those three things that I was told in the beginning came true. And it took a long time for us to be able to reach out and take the hand that was offered to us. And it is, you know, it's been quite a journey. I would have to say, and I tell people that I meet around here, and was reluctant to bring it up, but Ken was stationed in Hawaii. His duty station there was almost up, and he was going to be sent somewhere for further training. And part of that training would have been skydiving, and he did that as a hobby in Hawaii. And on Sunday, October 10th, 2009, on his third jump of the day, his chute failed to open, and that was his accident. That's what started the nightmare and started our journey to heal, have faith in God and faith in other people to help us through everything. And today, when we reach out to somebody who has had a recent tragedy or loss, it helps us put us in our place that we have come a long way. And it's very rewarding to be able to help someone, give them a little bit of hope, let them know they're not the only ones. Just like the compassionate friends, Tim and Adrian go out for the Navy SEAL Foundation sibling events. And I myself have been in a recovery program for many, many years, and that's where you learn to reach out and accept the hand that is offered to you. And when you meet people like that and meet in groups, the stigma of what are they going to think? It's you're with a group of people that have experienced similar things, and that takes quite a burden off right there and gives you a head start to put your toes out and test the water.
I think that's an excellent message for people who don't understand and for people who are taking the journey. And I really appreciate that testimony. I want to start the letters because I've got three of them and I don't know how long they are, but I know they're important. Who's going to read first for me?
Could I take 30 seconds and then do the letters?
I'm timing you.
It's I do want to say also, and you know, we are never all going to be on the same page. Like Dad said, the best thing we can do is keep an eye out on our loved ones, notice those cues when they need a hand, just want to sit and be quiet, and let them do it at their time. And it takes a while to notice that with everybody in the family. And the last thing I want to mention is the kids. It's hard. Everyone always comes up and asks about the parents. And for those who may be on my side of the story, that they're not forgetting about you. It's parents aren't supposed to lose their kids. And that's what always comes first in people's minds. They want to ask about the parents. If they don't ask about you, it's not that they're not thinking of you. It's that's how we go. It's kids don't go before parents or shouldn't go before parents, and it's not expected that way, but you are being thought of. People are thinking of you.
Thank you, Tim. We've got a few minutes. Who would like to read first?
Go ahead. I'll go. So I wrote a letter to my son, Ken. Ken, I hope you are enjoying the spirit world as much as I believe you are. It's been a long while since you left us. Some days it feels like that. Some days it is still very raw. Every day I think of you in some way, thoughts of you growing up with your sister and brother, things you all did, watching you grow, learn, make choices, and do the things that left your mark in this world. You had a very short, full life, but made several accomplishments along the way and touched many people in many ways that have been thinking of you often. You left the love of your life who will always be a big part of our family, as well as your amazing son. All the things that are part of your legacy. I remember holding you as a baby and flying you around the room and telling you what an amazing world it is out there and to grasp as much of it as you could. I believe, Ken, that you did just that. You always had a thirst for adventure. You always wanted to be James Bond. I remember talking about this with your Navy brothers that escorted you home and after the amazing service put on by the military. They looked at me and said, that's the work you did. You made it, Ken. You were James Bond. We are also very proud of you, and we are very proud of the amazing son you left. He certainly carries many of your traits, ambitions, and loves. He is smart, athletic, and funny little guy who is slowly turning into a young man. It was wonderful to have Adam with us so much after you left us. We are sad that he hasn't been allowed to visit his family at his father's home for quite some time. However, we are looking forward to the day soon when he can visit us often and we can teach and show him what a wonderful, amazing dad he had. I know you were keeping watch over him, Ken. Smile, Ken. You left a great legacy for him, your family, friends, and all who will learn of you. We feel you around us often. I miss you, my son, and one day, we will be together again. Until then, happy adventures. Your dad.
David, thank you so much. I know that was from the heart. In fact, I know everything that's been shared has been written on your heart before it was expressed. My gratitude is amazingly big right now. I'm so glad I had a chance to meet and hug each one of you and to hug Ken's spirit, for you made him live for me as well. I'm going to ask the rest of you to put your letters on hold for the next time, and I'm going to close us out. Wow. Frankly Speaking is our time and a space to help, to heal, to educate, to encourage one another into the best version of ourselves, no matter where we are in our journey. I like to leave a little spiritual soul food on the Frankly Speaking table every week. And this week is a note from Love, also known as God. Stop holding your breath. Got me a little teary-eyed here. Stop holding your breath. Breathe. There's enough. I have created an abundance of acceptance, attention, recognition, joy, peace, money, energy, clothes, food. I will never leave you without enough. And there's nothing to be afraid of. No feeling, no circumstance, no person. These things come and they go. And you can live through them without running, hiding, numbing, or hurting another one of my children. Did you know this, my agent, my angel? There's never been anything wrong with you, not one day in your life. You are exactly who you were meant to be right now, just as you are. You are not to be ashamed. You punish yourself, but you have no reason to be punished. You can stop now. You're free. When you were born, I put a piece of me in you. Like an indestructible, brilliant diamond, I placed a part of me inside of you. It is love. Love is perfect, and it's untouchable. No one can take it. It is the deepest, purest part of you. That part that will someday return to me. You are love. You cannot be tarnished by anything you've done or that has been done to you. Everyone carries this piece of me, and I am a part of you, and you are a part of each other. The essence of each of you is love. Please, dear audience, please, dear Owens family, feel the essence of love. Share the essence of love. Be the essence of love. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia. My guest has been the Owens family, David, Missy, and Tim, and in spirit, Ken, and by their side, Adrian. Your seat at the table is guaranteed. I look forward to next time. Until then, remember, you're worthy. You're stronger than you feel, smarter than you think, more beautiful than you know, and more loved than you can ever imagine. You're chosen. You're important. Treat yourself like someone you love. This is Tyra G, intentionally listening to and loving you.